Right. So I'd like to do a kind of a recap, elaboration from last week's talk on metta. And I was framing it in terms of an antidote to fear, anger. And this is, if you look at, we actually spent some time going through the actual Metta Sutta. These are the Buddha's words on loving kindness. And the backstory with that, the commentary is that a group of monks were told to go meditate in a forest, in a grove that had a lot of, was basically haunted. And they started to meditate, and all the spirits there weren't very happy about their presence and basically scared them so much they ran back to the Buddha. And the Buddha asked them to go back again and try again, and again they came back. And finally, the Buddha came up or offered this instructions around metta as a way for them to meet their fear, to actually turn toward it instead of being driven by it. And so the invitation last week, for those who were here, was to try that out, to see, is that actually work in my life? Can I bring metta to bear in times in my life where I'm feeling anxious, angry, feeling a sense of closed-heartedness, feeling a sense of fear, and seeing what happens in relationship to that. I was reflecting that there's three ways that come to mind that this works, if you had a chance to try it. One is that when we offer metta, we're basically interrupting this process of fear, process of anger. Because there's kind of this internal thing that starts to happen. There's these mental thoughts, there's emotions, there's all the story that comes up. It becomes this closed loop that when we participate in that, often it gets worse, right? It becomes, at least becomes self-perpetuating. That anger breeds more anger, the fear breeds more fear. And so how to step back to kind of slow that process or actually interrupt it, to step back a little bit and see, okay, let me be present here, to actually come into the present moment. Because so often the anger, the fear goes into the future, goes into the past, reflecting on all the harm that was caused by this person, all the fear of what might happen in the future, the anger, the outrage around it. So we're not talking about discernment so much. We're not talking about having good boundaries, but more just this habit of anger, this habit of a closed-heartedness that often comes forth in our lives. So when we decide to offer metta, in whatever form that takes, that starts to interrupt that. Now, I should probably pause for a second. If you're not familiar with this word metta, it basically is often translated as loving kindness. It's one of the four Brahma Viharas, these divine abodes. And loving kindness as a translation sometimes really works well, but sometimes it throws us off a little bit because I'm not really feeling very loving right now. So I can't, that means I can't really offer metta. My heart is so closed. I'm so much in my anger or my fear that metta just seems, the sense of love seems completely inaccessible. So I think sometimes reframing it as a basic friendliness or a willingness to turn toward or to be next to is a nice way of holding it. Because we can do that. We can be next to, even though our hearts are closed. I think I shared this last week that sometimes, I mean, luckily a lot less than it used to be in early in our relationship, but sometimes my wife and I would get into these kind of conflicts or these struggles where we basically thought the other person was wrong and we were right. Usually something around household chores or something like that. And you know how if you have been in a relationship, you know how those can feel very strong, right? You're really convinced by how righteous and right you are and how deluded and confused the other person is. But from that place, there's this deep sense of separation. And so metta, and often with my wife and I, we would sit down, okay, let's finally, at some point, we would let go a little bit of that resentment or that anger or their hurt enough to be next to. Sometimes literally sitting next to instead of, being in a different part of the house, actually listen to each other, to actually open that quality of dialogue. So when we bring metta forth, it's really that relationship of connecting with, of turning toward, as opposed to separate, as opposed to pushing away. So metta itself, that intentionality, starts to shift us from that normal habit mind, habit of contraction. Metta also has this quality of kind of healing this separation. Now, I was experimenting with this homework that we worked on last week. Is I was feeling angry at something, at some situation. I noticed that I stepped back and just noticed that mind state, how it just kind of keep going again and again. And if I stayed at a certain level, it doesn't really resolve. It just kind of perpetuates until finally I give up on it. But in that sense of being angry or irritated at someone or being afraid of something, there's a sense of separation, a sense of distance that emerges. Right? So metta starts to bring that back together. So offering those phrases of loving kindness, offering just even the wordless quality of turning toward, of connecting with. And sometimes when you do that, it may be hard to offer metta toward that particular person you're feeling angry toward or afraid of, but there might be a possibility to have metta toward yourself, metta toward this emotion that I'm having, this fear. You know, maybe I be safe. May I be peaceful in this moment. And so that way, that sense of separation starts to come back into a quality of interconnection, of that unity. And this is an essential part of metta, the willingness to be next to experience. And it really becomes something that we can infuse all aspects of our meditation. Sometimes we, like if you go on a meditation retreat, sometimes we do metta in the evening, the last sit. And I think Ajahn Amaro said, that kind of tends to put it at a lower priority. It's kind of like a after dinner mint, that you've had the main course and you just have this little sweet thing at the end of all the hard work. But really, metta is really should be imbued in our practice. You know, when we talk about being mindful, we tend to say, okay, be present, connect with what's here, and allow it to be how it is. Release the judging mind, release the comparing mind. Give it a chance to have its own expression, its own life. Right? Those are all ways of describing metta, that willingness to turn toward and be next to. Right? So if we look for this kind of gushing, really strong emotive quality, in the only way we can practice metta, it really limits that quality. Right? But if we have that sense of being next to, that becomes much more accessible, much more possible. So in daily life, this is a great time to practice it. Can I bring that forth? Can I be willing to kind of heal that separation even a little bit? It might be separate from that other person, but at least can I not be separate from some aspect of my own experience? Can I feel the quality of fear in my body with a little bit of allowing? Can I feel that sense of contraction with a little bit of space? Now, I know this is sometimes asking a lot, you know, that the mind can get so strong in these habits, like judging, for example. And sometimes we find that we can judge the fact that we're judging, right? And then we judge the fact that we're judging that we're judging. And we just kind of get more and more tight around the whole thing. But if we can just have a little bit of space, sometimes I think of it just almost like a hair breadth of space around it, a little bit of allowance. Maybe I can't allow the thing that I'm judging. Maybe I can't allow the fact that I'm judging. Maybe I can't allow the fact that I'm judging the fact that I'm judging. Then maybe the third judgment out, I can just soften a little bit, bring a little quality of metta. That's actually starts to transform the whole process. Because instead of reinforcing these patterns of separation, we're starting to come back into interconnection. And that's what we're training our minds to do every time we practice meditation. We're practicing opening to this breath, opening to this body sensation, opening to this sound. So it's actually quite a profound training. And this is one of the things that I think is sometimes surprising to us as practitioners. As we think, wow, I'm meditating every day. I don't really feel like much is happening. And yet people start to see a difference in me. I start to find that I act in a different way in relationship. Patterns that I used to like get short with, patterns of interaction, something starts to fall away that wasn't intentional. it just starts to let go. I think that's from us learning how to connect with this moment's experience, time in and again. Metta also starts to change this basic intentionality that we often carry. So when you're in the middle of a state of anger or state of fear, if you step back and sense what's your intention, it's often one of separation, or of anger, or of hatred. It's trying to push something away, trying to get away from something, or to harm something. There's this intention that comes. Metta starts to change that basic intentionality. So this is a story, I don't think I shared this last week actually, that Sharon Salzberg was practicing metta on a retreat. She was going to do a long retreat. I think she did about 2 weeks of metta and felt like it wasn't really working that well. So Sharon Salzberg is one of the kind of founders in the Western tradition of this Western Vipassana that came back from the East, offering these wisdom and compassion practices. But she had some kind of emergency come up and had to leave the retreat, and she was packing in a hurried way and dropped a bowl and shattered on the floor. And she heard herself, critics, say, "Oh, you're such a klutz, but I love you. But I love you." And she was so shocked to hear that addition, that something had shifted in those weeks of doing metta. You know, if you've practiced, I remember practicing a metta retreat myself and just noticing this intentionality. It's like it's what loads the way we actually, or before we actually act, think, do, there's an intention that precedes that. That intentionality sometimes comes from ignorance, sometimes from hurt, from greed, from hatred. But that intentionality can start to transform to one of connection, of being next to, being with. And this is a beautiful thing in our lives. This is really starts to bring us forth in the practice in a way that is very strong. So these three aspects of metta allowing us to turn toward, to actually connect with, to kind of change the intentionality, and just to pause, to kind of interrupt the patterns, are very, very helpful for us to practice, to actually see for yourself. And I think I'm a big believer in practicing when it's fairly easy and doable, and you know, when just kind of the subtle things in our lives, because that starts to train us how that process works in the much bigger things. But it does take a lot of kind of commitment, because it's easy just to kind of, oh, I'm just going to rant a little bit. I'm going to honk my horn at that driver. I'm going to be a little rude, because it seems like there's not much consequence. So we have to really bring a level of commitment to our practice to pay attention to those small things. But even if you don't, big things in our life will actually in some ways force us to understand the value of that connection. It's like when we don't have any other choice but to connect, but to turn, because any other way is too painful. The line from, I've been reading this the last 3 weeks, from Thomas Merton, that prayer and love are learned in the hour when prayer becomes impossible and the heart has turned to stone. So I translate this word prayer into our meditation, this quality of connection, of turning toward, of love, of metta. I learned this myself in a difficult time when my wife was in the hospital, in the ER, actually, emergency room. And there was a lot of unknownness to that. And I was trying to meditate, and I just found like I couldn't make contact with the breath, with the body. It was such a really a traumatic experience. But metta, I said, okay, I'm going to try this thing. I've heard about metta. And it actually allowed me to connect. It's like that intentionality helping me pause in that moment to interrupt the mind stream of worry and fear, to actually connect with her, with the people, the caregivers, with myself in a different way. So the Metta Sutta, the Buddha came forth with this sutta as an offering for these monks who are really struggling with their own fear in this scary place. And this sutta, we went through it in a lot of detail last week, so I'm just going to touch upon it, but hopefully you had a chance to read it this week. And if not, try looking it up, just the Metta Sutta. In the Metta Sutta, there's a number of lines when it's basically saying that if you live in a way that's based in non-harm, if you're not causing harm, if you actually have an ethical life, it's easier for you to relax into yourself. It's easier for you then to connect with metta. Because this makes sense in a very kind of concrete way, that if we have these ideas of being kind and generous, but our actions don't reflect that, you know, then there's a discrepancy, there's a dissonance with that. But if we actually practice, okay, how do I act in a way that's kind, that's ethical, that the wise would never later reprove? You know, there's to being completely there in that quality of ethics, of kindness, then it allows the metta to start to come forth. And in this particular sutta, the way the Buddha is describing metta, it's different than we often learn it. Like if you go on a retreat or in a class where we offer these particular phrases. Okay, so I often do phrases like, may you be safe and protected. May you be peaceful. May you live with ease, or may you live in ease. So these phrases help give voice to the metta. But the technique of phrases, and my phrases aren't, you know, there, you can find whatever phrases work for you. There's many other phrases out there. But the phrases actually came later in this whole history of Buddhist practice. You know, long after the Buddha had passed away. In this sutta, you get a sense of how the Buddha taught metta. It was much more of this quality of, first of all, going, you know, just emanating loving kindness in the different directions, in the forward direction, the backward direction, offering metta to all types of beings, you know, whether they're, he used his phrases, wherever living beings there may be, may all beings live in ease, be at ease, whether they're weak or strong, emitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings live at ease. Right? So this is a different way of practicing. Now, if you ever struggled with metta, like I actually did for a number of years, it just felt like I didn't quite connect with the phrases. I remember Kamala Masters was doing a non-residential retreat here at Seattle Insight. And she said, you can also do metta in a wordless quality, just this emanating forth. And that connected with me in a different way, because the words felt like so different, distance from the insight practice that I so cherished and appreciated. It just felt, okay, this is just so much noise in the mind, is the way I was holding it back in my younger days. But the wordless quality, and it's actually more akin to how the Buddha taught it. Now, metta also, as I talked about with intentionality, we see through this in the sutta, not through anger, let none through anger or ill will wish harm on another. Right? We'll actually talk about this more next week as I give another talk. Even as a mother protects with her life her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. So metta, this quality of metta can have a fierceness to it, this protective quality to it. As I mentioned, the Kuan Yin statue here is very in repose. But sometimes the Kuan Yin, this Buddhist god or goddess of compassion, is portrayed in much more like a warrior. And sometimes that's what compassion needs. That sometimes is what metta needs, is to come forth with that strong heart. So start to bring metta, if you're not already, more and more into the forefront, into how you practice. Doesn't mean you have to do the phrases, but just have that quality of turning toward, of connecting with. And in daily life, particularly notice when your heart gets closed, when you get tight, when you get angry or fearful, and see if you can practice something different. Practice these words that the Buddha gave some 2,600 years ago. This willingness to turn toward, to be next to. All right, let's just pause for a moment, let those words settle. So in a moment, we'll take a break, but I want to use this time to just do a couple quick announcements. Of course, the ongoing one is just being awareness of Dana. Dana is the Pali word for generosity. And that's how your contributions to SIMS and to the teachers help us continue to be able to teach and have an organization to continue to be here. So both online and in person, please make that an ongoing part of your practice. You know, I was talking to Carrie and Tweri the other day, and there's a point in SIMS before we had all this electronic stuff and all this hybrid model, we just had these baskets, and you would see people line up and offer Dana, and it really helped inspire you. And here it's a little bit more separate. We kind of feel it in isolation. So it's so important to keep that as a central part of your practice, whatever means is appropriate for you. It doesn't matter how much or what it is, but to have a relationship with it. All right, so let's take a 5-minute break. We'll come back at 8:10. We'll do some small group discussion around this whole topic of how do you use metta in a practical way? How have you explored it? All right, see you back in 5 minutes. All right, so in a moment, we'll break up into smaller groups, both online and in person. But just kind of frame this discussion group. So we'll be exploring the homework from last week. So basically it's around how do we use metta to work with our fear, to work with our anger? Can it be an antidote to those areas? Perhaps you're able to practice when you're feeling anxious or irritated, fearful, to bring some quality of metta. And metta has, again, a wide spectrum of how it's expressed. It could be phrases, it could be this wordless quality or this willingness simply to turn next to. Sometimes metta toward oneself, sometimes toward an aspect of yourself or toward another person. And what have you noticed from that? Which ways have been beneficial? All right, so hopefully you can relate to that. And even if you haven't had a chance to practice it, you might be sitting and feeling a little irritation. See if you can practice it right then and there. Can I feel some, work with some metta? So these groups are not about trying to solve each other's problems. It's really about trying to share in a heartfelt way and to be listened to deeply. And that's a good way to hold it. Hold everything that's said there confidentially. You're not trying to give advice, you're not trying to solve something for them, but just give a chance for them to express and for you to express. This is a powerful part of being in Sangha, because so often you don't have a chance to be able to share these kind of things with people who don't practice. Right? So it's a precious opportunity. All right, so find groups of around 4 to 5 people is a good number. And so for 20 minutes, we'll be just dialoguing, just monitoring your own time, and I'll give you a 5-minute warning. All right, so go ahead. They're in room and online. You should be breakout room should open momentarily. All right, I'll come back. So we have a chance now for any questions or sharing about what you found. If you have someone who could volunteer to pass the mic around so that people can hear you online, and then here in the online you can raise your virtual hand. Quite a contrast between all the all the talking. All right. Yes, go ahead.
Was that a question, or are you volunteering to pass
that? Oh, no, I was asking a question.
Okay, sorry.
My name's Anne, and I've listened to a guided meditation that was kind of meta-focused, where you just kind of put a very slight smile in your eyes or your face. You feel a smile across your chest, you know? Mm. And I experience it as like a door opening. Mm. But it also feels kind of like approval as opposed to kindness.
Accrual?
Approval.
Approval, okay.
And I don't know if that's normal or, but it seems like there's a difference, and I just wondered about your thoughts on that.
Tell me more about how their approval came up around that practice.
It just, like when I smile, even if you can't see it, if I'm smiling, it feels like what I'm doing is like kind of approving of an experience or something, instead of like kindness feels less judgment, like approval is judgmental.
Sure, yeah. So kind of like in an interpersonal relationship, you smile so the person knows you're listening, you get them, and so we can do that internally.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so just your thoughts.
Yeah, so that's, well, metta is one of those practices, like all the paramis actually, they have things that kind of elicit. Sometimes there's kind of things which are not quite metta or not quite generosity that come up as we start to practice it. And that's one of those, yeah, when we're trying to, I think a metta is basically being, it doesn't have any agenda, it doesn't have any strings attached. And you can notice how, yeah, there's this, okay, I'm smiling to let you know I approve of you. But that approval, it does have the opposite side. If I approve you of you, then it means I may not approve of you next time. There can be that kind of judgmental piece. So as you notice that come up, just, the big thing is just to be aware of it. And that's most of the battle, if you will. Okay, there's that little quality of approving. And now you see, can I relax that a little bit? One way is just to kind of release it. Another way is to actually highlight it with your attention and actually turn toward it with more awareness. It's like, okay. And that's when I think I mentioned this last week. Yeah, Christina Feldman doing this kind of hybrid practice of insight and metta. So you're practicing metta and you notice, oh, there's a little bit of that approving in my metta, like I approve of you. Let me turn that quality of attention to approval itself. What does that actually feel like? And of course, that can open a whole, you know, history of things for you. But then it starts to help you see that. Can I offer metta without really with no strings attached? No asking you to change or not change. It's almost transcends behaviors and actions. You know, the discernment is another, we don't throw that out the window, but metta itself kind of has that quality of, that's how we can do it to all beings, right? Because there's some beings we don't approve of or we don't like, or but so metta kind of asks us to transcend us. Yeah. Does that help?
Yeah. Thank you.
Could I have someone help pass the mic around?
Thank you, Anne. Michelle, is this working? So I listened this last week to a talk by Tara Brach on, it had to do with having tea with Mara. And so I've been thinking a lot about inviting in the difficult and showing some curiosity about what the unmet needs are, whether it's my own feelings of anger, irritability, or disappointment, which is a big one that I deal with, where I feel like I just wish things were different. And also in my relationship and my marriage and some little things, like I wanted to go someplace by bicycle, he wants to drive, and I'm like, and that I want to persuade him to be different. And instead, I've been working on, I think, inviting Mara into tea as that, that story about the Buddha, that it is a form of metta, and it has to do with, identifying the unmet needs, the wisdom in those feelings that when they come up, what they are communicating, and not rejecting them or judging them, but inviting them in. And that's been really helpful in my practice, kind of metta applied in daily
beautiful.
Life.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, that willingness to have tea with Mara, to have tea with, be in dialogue with the difficulty. And it often is, there is wisdom in there. There is something that's not acknowledged. And that if we kind of keep it at arm's distance, we never get to hear that. And I think that's, you know, sometimes we think of our practice as being so passive because we're just kind of being with. But I find that actually being able to fully be with something then allows my actions to flow in a much more clear way because I'm actually connected. Now how I want things to be or how I wish they were, but how they actually are. And that allows us to be much more skillful and effective in life. Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. It's a beautiful analogy. Yeah, Deborah.
It was just a brief comment in our group of five. I just really was impressed that all of us were metta practitioners and we all had a different style.
Huh?
Just a little bit different way of doing the of evoking the sense of metta.
Yeah, beautiful.
It was just everybody, all the five of us had different ways of doing that. I don't have a question that goes with that. It was just something I noticed.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that because if we find an approach of metta that feels like it's not working, we can adjust it, we can shift it, we can modify it. Or if a metta that has been working stops working, we can try a different way. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, my name is Braden. One thing I brought up in my group that I just wanted to share in case it's helpful for anyone else, it can be really, really tough to offer metta towards yourself. And one of the best pieces of advice, kind of techniques to help with that I've ever found is to imagine myself as a small child and offer metta to that child. Because when I think of myself as a small child, I can only feel love towards that child. There's no sense of judgment. There's no sense of negativity or hate. It just makes it a lot easier to offer metta to them as opposed to my current self.
Yeah.
Which then allows that feeling of metta to flow through my current self somehow. It's very strange how it works, but it's really helpful for me, and hopefully it can be helpful for anybody else.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, that's a nice technique of offering metta to a younger sense of ourselves or that child of us. And you know, I had one yogi who talked about her experience of that because, you know, she couldn't remember a time when it wasn't a difficult being a child. So sometimes, you know, not to discount that difficulty if that is her history, but if it works, that's a beautiful, beautiful technique because it allows our hearts to open because we often hold kind of the modern day sense of us in such harshness or such judgment, but our hearts can open to that small child. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, go ahead, Leslie, and then let's see if there's anyone online who likes to share.
It occurs to me, to follow up with that, is that people that I have a hard time with, I could imagine them as children.
Hmm.
Boy, does that help me open up to a few individuals. So anyway, just a thought. Thanks.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, metta is one of those techniques that we can be quite creative with. You know, so along those lines of when we find it's really difficult to offer metta to a person or to ourselves, that, you know, imagining them or ourselves as small children. Sometimes you can imagine or just reflect on how you too wish to be happy. They too wish to be happy, you know, and kind of connect with that commonality. Sometimes one other trick is to offer metta to someone who's really easy to offer metta to, like maybe it's your, you know, maybe it is a child in your life, or maybe it's your friend, or maybe it's your cat who always is happy to see you, or your dog. And then flip it and imagine them offering metta to you. And sometimes that is really nice. Okay, I can receive that because they hold you in a different light than we often do ourselves. Yeah, so that's beautiful. All the creative ways to work around the difficult. Anyone online like to ask or share anything? Okay, go ahead, Judith. Let's see, sounds like you're still muted. Let's see.
There we go.
Okay.
Okay, so when Nina did her day-long retreat on Metta, actually she did suggest that we think of the difficult person as a baby or a young child. And the other thing that she did that I felt was really helpful, when we were having some questions and answers, a couple of people mentioned that they were trying to send Metta to someone from their lives who had been a really traumatic figure in their lives, and that it was making them feel really shut down or very anxious, and what should they do about that? And she said, don't do that person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Put that person aside. That person can be part of all beings, but just don't focus on that one. And I thought that made sense.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Yeah, the Nina LaBoy suggested is that, yeah, if it's someone just there's so much charge around them, you know, to go, you know, to just, okay, they're a part of all beings. That's a good way to reframe it. Because there's for those who don't know, there's classically we go through different categories of beings, like self and benefactor and friend and neutral person and enemy and difficult, you know, slash difficult person. And we usually suggest as teachers, okay, don't pick the most difficult person. But a lot of us are like, okay, I'm going to tackle that one. And then it's like their mind just kind of pushes that back. And I think it is really helpful to be respectful of that, to not feel like you have to push through that. Yeah, so thanks for sharing that. Karen, would you like to unmute? Let me see what's going on here. Okay, try it again. I think I need to just give you self-permission. Let's see, you should be able to, can we hear you? Oh, there we go, there you go.
So just a couple of things that I found really interesting. One was the anger, and you talked about anger and fear last week, and I, this particular person that I have a lot of anger to, that makes my job difficult for myself, but for a lot of reasons, I decided to turn towards her, you know, just some like, this is a really difficult person, but it's something that I need to go towards. And I was like, just turn towards her, just acknowledge in my head that this is going to be difficult with her. That's all I did. Hmm. You know, I wasn't like going to be best friends and it's all going to work out and, you know, kumbaya, but, but it was amazing that instantly with that walking in there, what arose was fear. And I didn't like that, because that felt out of control, or that she has that power. And I didn't try to do anything with that. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And I didn't try to figure it out psychologically or go anywhere with it. I just was like, just notice that fear. And I haven't been able to go anywhere with it. I'm just like, oh, that's interesting that's there, you know. And so I'm at a loss that, you know, certain things arise when you turn towards something, that something's coming from it, but what are you supposed to do with it?
You got a excited cat there. So, you know, I think of Metta, you know, not as a one size fits all or a tool that's going to fix everything, but it's kind of, it's one of our tool sets. So something like that, when you have an ongoing relationship with someone at work who's just very difficult. So there's part of their behavior, but there's how do I navigate that? And also, what does that elicit in myself?
Right.
So when
I was curious when the fear, excuse me, I was curious when it arose, and I did try to just be present with it. I mean, as much as you can when you're at work, but I just it's sort of like it's still there.
Yes, and that fear, it's, I don't know the situation, you know, maybe the fear is really justified, but often our fear is kind of, part of it is what we're projecting into that relationship or what kind of the meaning we make around it. So mm-hmm. technique I'll share that's really helpful for myself is, it's from, I heard it from Ajahn Amaro, who's a monk in the Thai forest tradition. He was actually here a number of years ago doing a retreat. But he called it the sandwich technique. So basically, you have you're making a sandwich, and the first part, let's say you're meditating for about, let's say 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 45 minutes to make the math easy. First 15 minutes, you're just feeling breath and body really settling. The middle 15, you actually bring forth that person, bring forth that difficulty. See if you can bring forth that quality of fear, but it's held in this space of the mindfulness. And so as you do that, you're going to be, it's almost like you just plop that in your lap. Okay, let me feel that fear I have when I'm around that other person. Open to the sensations of it, open to the deeper beliefs around yourself, and without trying to change or do anything with it. And the last third, go back just to the regular mindfulness practice. By doing that, you start to see, and doing this off, not in the middle of the relationship, but you know, at home, you start to have a deeper understanding of kind of what the train is for yourself. You know, what is this train? What is the fears that are around losing my job? Is it about being judged? Is it like being all these different ways it can come up? That helps, that clarity helps you be able to navigate the situation more clearly. And then in the middle of it too, there's of course all the things you may have to do, like talking to other coworkers to get support or talking to a supervisor. There's so many other ways to navigate HR. There's, you know, sometimes people are very difficult in our lives. But this is one way we can kind of become more clear about it. And also, the final thing I'll say is when you feel that fear, just offer some metta to yourself. Like, may I be safe? May I be peaceful? Mm-hmm. You know, so in the middle of that, okay, you're with this person. Just a couple silent phrases. May I be safe? May I be peaceful? Because with metta, it's like it may not be toward that person, might be too hard right now, but toward your own self or an aspect of that fear that can be perhaps possible.
Right. Yeah, because when I started, I was being very gentle with myself, like this is going to be really difficult. And the fear is not like I'm going to be hurt or I'm going to get ears boxed. It's just that that's what arose. And I thought that was so interesting. And then the things that follow, but it's just I just wanted to leave it alone, but it's just carrying through, you know. And I'll just be cleaning the dishes and I'll be like, oh, that's interesting, that fear rose up and I haven't gone towards it, and I don't know if, like you said, sit with it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, because sometimes what happens is the fear that we have in the present life, it's kind of we have to kind of recalibrate to the present moment. Like for myself, I've been so many times I've been really afraid or nervous about a relationship or someone who might be in authority or something. And eventually I realized, okay, I just need to recalibrate that I'm not a little kid anymore. I'm an adult. And sometimes that process really helps, you know, navigate this challenging life we often have.
Right. Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Yeah, good luck with that. I'd be curious to see how that exploration goes.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate that.
All right, we have time maybe for one or two if there's anyone.
That was more of a curiosity question about the story of the Buddha. So he asked others to practice metta, like the monks with the ghost and all. So is there another story where the teacher was like tested and maybe, I don't know, had to love someone who did him like wrong as much as he loved, I don't know, his own like family or something like that? So
did he actually do what he said?
Kind of, yeah, because that story is great, but it's like... do this, but do it.
Yeah, that's
yourself.
A, you know, I, That's a great question, because he definitely had people he had struggles with. I mean, his cousin tried to kill him a few times, you know, and in the suttas, he's like, he's kind of laying into his cousin. He's an idiot. He's going to go to a bad place. I always like to try to take the Buddha off this pedestal. I'm just saying, like, he's, because sometimes he's so far out there, it's like, okay, I can never be like that. But if I say he's a human being who had his own struggles, he had his own times he forgot. But I'll think about that, see if there's a story, but nothing comes to mind around that particularly whether he was sharing.
Like a tough coworker or something like that. Yeah.
I think there are some things, like he would talk about not turning away from fear. I think there's something I remember. There's so many suttas, but I remember that was one aspect, but I don't know the details around it. Yeah, so if any of those Buddhist scholars out there know this, let me know. All right.
Yeah, one more.
One more? Yes.
Is there time? Or
yes, okay. There's time.
I'll keep it short. So in our group, we were talking a little bit about, you know, like you just mentioned, the difficult person, how we deal with that. And we were talking about, like, when we do exercise metta toward the difficult person and they still end up treating you badly or doing something that angers you, you know, how do you handle it? And I remembered Nina saying in the all-day talk that one of the goals is to not be attached to an outcome.
Yes.
So is that, I wanted to ask, number one, is that a normal, like, part of metta, is just to be detached from the outcome? And do you have any advice about that? And then just the last example I'll give, I wish I had been thinking about metta at the time, but I had kind of a difficult student last week. And I, you know, came up with what I thought was a really brilliant lesson plan that I thought people would be really interested in and very, like, engaged. And most of them were, but this one student, who I think is wonderful, I think he's a great guy, but, you know, you could tell it was obvious that he thought it was kind of lame, and, you know, he was, like, mumbling under his breath. And I was a little crushed because I had, like, worked so hard, and I was like, they're going to love this. But yeah, so I think I was thinking during our discussion that, you know, if that kind of thing happens again, I'll, you know, try not to be as attached to the outcome. So I just wondered, like, do you have any input or any advice on, like, how people can do that?
So kind of two parts. One is when you feel attached to the outcome, you want the person to change. And also when you feel kind of crushed or you want to be praised and you got blamed. So metta is one of the interesting aspects of metta, that it does transform based on what it encounters. So I think often a lot of these questions, when we're trying to offer metta to a difficult situation or a difficult aspect or a difficult person, it might actually be more helpful to switch to compassion. Okay, feeling that pain. Okay, I'm feeling crushed here. Let me open to that quality of crushedness. Let me have compassion for that. So it's, you know, there's also this willingness to be next to something that's some aspect of yourself, someone else who is suffering. And so when someone is difficult, and you say, okay, may you be happy, may you say, you know, may you make better choices in your life. You know, those kind of, we've kind of drifted off metta a little bit there. Right? And so you notice that. It's like, okay, I have this agenda. So just like Nina said, there's no strings attached. There's no outcome that's being asked of that. And also, but at the same time, we're also open to seeing what arises in that. And often what you notice is that there's a different way, it starts to change the way you relate to that person. You start to maybe see them a little bit in a softer way, but you start to be maybe not as hooked by the way they act. There's just kind of a greater clarity that you just kind of reflect that, okay, this person wants to be happy just like I do. They may not have any idea how to become happy, but there's still maybe some of that's their actions are coming from that. Maybe it's coming from you know, pain. So you have to kind of notice, okay, maybe what's the most helpful foothold in this situation? And if you just kind of, metta is not working, maybe switching to compassion. Yeah. And I bet it was a great lesson plan. All right, we've come to our 9 o'clock hour, so the end of tonight. So thank you all for your questions and your engagement around this important exploration of metta. And next week, we'll have another talk around metta, a little different take on it, and then a final discussion. So be well, enjoy your evening, and sleep well. We'll see you next time. Thank you all those online for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, goodbye.